prepared for listening. Comprehensive rebuild dated April 26, 2026. Opening hard on Council of Record. Estimated running time approximately 45 minutes at 150 words per minute. How to listen. This page is designed to be read aloud by your device. In Google Chrome, tap the three-dot menu at the top right and select Read Aloud. On iPhone Safari, tap the AA icon in the address bar and select Listen to Page. On Android Chrome, the Read Aloud option appears directly in the menu. You can listen while driving, during a commute, or at any other time reading is inconvenient. Statutes are spoken in ordinary English throughout. Document tracking numbers and envelope identifiers are preserved in the underlying case file at gacyomira.com and in Section 10 of the main portal. A man, entrusted by the state of California. This is a narrated summary of a documentary record in the matter of Gacio versus Tran and others, Orange County Superior Court Case Number 30/2024-00141091. Before this narration describes what was done to a 72-year-old retired California public school administrator and his family, this narration is going to describe a man. That man is a California attorney named Stephen D. Silverstein. He is admitted to the State Bar of California, where he holds bar number 86466. He has practiced law in Southern California for 47 years. He graduated from law school in 1978 and opened his own firm immediately. He calls his firm simply Stephen D. Silverstein Eviction Law. Mr. Silverstein is not an ordinary attorney. He occupies a position of public trust above the ordinary attorney. In his own published marketing copy, on his own website at stevensilverstein.com, Mr. Silverstein states the following. In his own words, I have been asked to sit judge pro tem by all the Orange County courts. That sentence describes a state-conferred judicial function. A judge pro tem is a private attorney appointed by a court to sit on the bench and decide matters in the place of the regular judge with the same authority. Mr. Silverstein has, in his own published statement, accepted that appointment in every Orange County court. He does not deny it. He markets it. Mr. Silverstein has also published his philosophy of practice, in his own words, on the same website. The reviewing attorney is asked to read these phrases as published by Mr. Silverstein himself. His firm specializes in tenant evictions and has represented landlords across Los Angeles, Orange, Riverside, and San Bernardino counties since 1979. The firm's stated main goal in an eviction is to remove the tenant from the premises as quickly as legally possible. Mr. Silverstein, in his own published copy, has acknowledged accusations of being overly aggressive in the prosecution of evictions, and his published response is that he pleads guilty to the charge. Mr. Silverstein has further published an article in the trade press for landlords, titled, Why Wait 3 Weeks for a Trial?, in which he advises landlord clients to use a procedural maneuver called a motion for summary judgment to remove a tenant without ever placing the case before a jury. Mr. Silverstein, in that article, characterizes that maneuver in his own words as a little-known weapon that the landlord has in his arsenal. He describes the rare tenant who manages to defend such a motion with the figure of speech, in his own words, that even a blind squirrel occasionally finds an acorn. That is the man. A 47-year veteran of California eviction practice. A man who, in his own published statement, sits as a temporary judge in every Orange County court. A man who, in his own published writing, has pleaded guilty to being overly aggressive in the prosecution of evictions. A man who instructs landlords through trade press articles to use procedural shortcuts to remove tenants without ever reaching the merits. Mr. Silverstein is not new to a federal courtroom in the posture of defendant. On November 30th, 2018, in the United States District Court for the Central District of California, in the matter of B. Moan v. Stephen D. Silverstein, attorney at law, case number 817-0550, the Honorable Josephine L. Staten entered a final judgment in favor of the plaintiff and against Mr. Silverstein personally for $1,000 and identified the plaintiff as the prevailing party with rights to attorney fees and costs. That judgment is on the federal docket. It establishes that Mr. Silverstein has, on at least one prior occasion, been found by a federal jury to have caused a private plaintiff legally cognizable harm in the conduct of his eviction practice. Hold that picture. A man entrusted by the state of California with judicial functions in every county he practices in. A man who has been a federal defendant. A man who instructs landlords in print on how to skip the trial process. And, as the next sections of this narration will demonstrate, a man who, in this matter, signed his name to filings that on their face fall short of the basic statutory requirements that 47 years on the same forms ought to have made automatic. That tension is the question this narration places before the listener. How many times has this attorney, occupying his position of public trust, processed documents through court staff who know him from the bench that ought never to have left his office? This narration does not answer that question. The records that would answer it are reachable by the regulators and prosecutors to whom this case file has been submitted. What this narration can do is describe, on the documentary record of this single matter, what occurred. 2. The pattern before the pattern. Before the Gassio family ever set foot on the property at 19,235 Bryn Court in Huntington Beach, that same property had already produced an unlawful detainer action by the same property owner. The prior tenant fought the case. The prior tenant was nonetheless removed from the home on the day after Christmas. The keys changed hands during the holiday week. In the months that followed, the property owner applied for COVID-era rental assistance funds in the public posture of a landlord who had been deprived of rent by a non-paying tenant. Whether the recovery of those public funds was consistent with the documentary record of the prior tenancy is a question that the agencies administering the COVID rental assistance program are positioned to answer. The relevant records sit on government servers and are reachable by audit. Approximately 30 days after the prior tenant was removed, the same owner offered the property for residential lease at $5,000 per month. The new tenants were Michael Gassio, Yulia Gassio, and Yulia's mother. The arrival date was May 1st, 2022. The condition of the property on the day of arrival was not consistent with the listing description. The listing had promised fresh paint, pet-friendly, an ocean view, coastal lights, an in-unit washer and dryer, and all appliances included except the refrigerator. None of those amenities existed. There was no ocean view. There was no washer or dryer anywhere on the premises. No coastal lights on a property whose foundation is 1.6 meter below sea level with two-story townhouses in each direction. No pet door for the 100-pound dogs. And on the first day of occupancy, photographs taken at 11:39 in the morning documented established black mold colonies under the kitchen sink, consistent with months or years of moisture accumulation from an unpermitted drain modification completed approximately a decade earlier. The dishwasher was inoperable, full of water, as the plug had rusted out under the sink and shorted. The premises had not been turned between tenancies in any manner consistent with reasonable preparation for a $5,000 per month single-family lease. 26 months later, this same family was removed from the same property by the same owner, represented by the same council of record, on a three-day notice that this narration will describe. Within weeks of the family's voluntary departure, the property reappeared on the Airbnb short-term rental platform at approximately $7,995 per month. That figure is approximately 122% above what the prior tenant had paid, and approximately 50% above the $5,350 per month the Gassio family had paid in their final year. The pattern is documentary. The same property, the same owner, the same council of record. Two consecutive evictions, both removing long-tenured residential occupants, followed in each case by a re-entry of the property into the rental market at substantially higher revenue. The reviewing attorney is asked to hold this pattern in mind as the rest of the narration proceeds. 3. The family. The tenants were Michael Gassio, age 72, retired California public school administrator and former middle school vice principal, and his wife, Yulia Gassio, professor of art at California State University, Long Beach. Mr. Gassio retired in October of 2019 after 30 years in the California public school system. Before that, he served in California Juvenile Corrections. Before that, 16 years in California Automotive Finance. He is the speaker. The narrator and the plaintiff, who has organized this case file page by page, document by document, exhibit by exhibit, for the past 15 months. The household also included Yulia's mother, a Ukrainian woman in her 70s, named in paragraph 1.B of every executed lease on the property as a resident of the premises. She is a senior under California Welfare and Institutions Code Section 156-1027. She is non-English speaking. The listing brokerage held this fact in writing prior to lease execution. She slept on the floor the first night of the tenancy because there was no second bed and she did not want to be a burden to the household. This is the family. A career educator. A university professor. An elderly mother who survived war and displacement before she ever set foot in California. For the 26-month payment record. From the day the family moved in on May 1st, 2022, through the day they vacated voluntarily on August 5th, 2024, rent was paid every month by electronic wire transfer from a Wells Fargo Premier checking account belonging to the husband to Fat L. Tran, the landlord, personally. Consecutive monthly wire transfers of $5,000 each, January 2023 through April 2024. Each carrying a unique Wells Fargo confirmation number. Each timed on or near the 20th of the month, consistent with a non-standard by the 20th payment demand the landlord had communicated during the 2022 tenancy. That demand was a unilateral modification of the lease's payment on the first term. The plaintiff objected in writing on March 29, 2023, stating, "You cannot change contract on your own." The landlord ignored the objection and continued to demand early payment under threat of late fee and credit damage. The plaintiff complied under duress. Plus, an April 19th, 2024 wire of $5,000. The sender memorandum on that wire reads, in the husband's own words, new lease, 24, one payment at $5,000. Plus, a June 28th, 2024 wire of $5,350. The sender memorandum on that wire reads, unknown contract for July payment, 27 of 37 on contracts. Wires in total. Continuous use of the landlord's personal Wells Fargo deposit account from April of 2022 through the end of June 2024. 26 months. Over $94,000 electronically transferred, person to person, with each transfer permanently recorded on Wells Fargo's servers and traceable by confirmation number. Add to that the executed leases. Add to that the May 28th, 2024 cashier's check. Add to that the second cashier's check paid under written protest in April of 2025. The complete documented payment record from this family to this landlord across the full 28-month span exceeds $105,000 in primary document-anchored, traceable payments. Then read the three-day notice that opened the unlawful detainer in this matter dated June 21, 2024. That notice alleges non-payment of rent. 5. The Berkshire Turn. And the brokerage that signed the lease. The corporate broker on the executed April 2024 lease was Berkshire Hathaway Home Services California Properties. Hold that name. It is going to change. The licensee on the lease, the man who signed as property manager, was Hanson Treeley, a California Department of Real Estate Broker Associate. License number 01358448. Mr. Lay's email signature on the lease on the day of execution identified him as a Berkshire Hathaway Home Services California Properties Broker Associate. The corporate broker license under which Mr. Lee operated belonged to a designated officer of record. That designated officer was, and remains, Dennis Allen Rosa's California Department of Real Estate Broker License Number 0602101, issued March 7, 1986, 40 years in the corporate broker. Mr. Rosas's personal real estate license carries no public disciplinary finding. Mr. Rosas's corporate license record at an affiliated entity called Mulhern Realtors Incorporated, carries three California Department of Real Estate disciplinary proceedings. The first, in 1991. The second, in the year 2000. A 45-day suspension stayed on payment of $4,500 plus audit costs after an audit found a $45,000 overage in one trust account, a shortage in the second, and a non-licensee employee named as a signatory on both trust accounts. That non-licensee had been a signatory on the firm's trust accounts for 19 years. The third, in the form of an accusation filed by the Department of Real Estate on May 18, 2020, case number H41672, LA. That accusation pled three causes of action against Mulhern Realtors Incorporated, unlicensed mortgage loan originator activity in violation of Business and Professions Code, Section 1016.6.02, substantial misrepresentation in violation of Section 10176, Subdivision A, and negligence in violation of Section 10177. Subdivision G, the corporation, at the time of that accusation, operated under multiple fictitious business names, including Berkshire Hathaway Home Services California Properties, active as a DBA since February 24, 2014. The stipulation that resolved that proceeding was signed by Dennis Allen Rosas, in his capacity as the designated officer of record on January 5, 2021. His own signature on a corporate broker finding of negligence under Section 10177, Subdivision G, 3 years before the Gassio lease was placed in front of this family. Now the Berkshire turn. On November 10, 2025, 5 months after the trial in this matter concluded, and after this case had begun to attract attention from multiple regulatory agencies, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services California Properties was acquired by Coldwell Banker Real Estate LLC and rebranded as Coldwell Banker Envision. Hanson Lay carried forward into the new entity. Same licensee, same Department of Real Estate license number, same supervisory officer of record. The brokerage on the door of his office now reads Coldwell Banker. The brokerage on the lease that this family signed reads Berkshire Hathaway. The corporate name changed during the pendency of this matter. The people did not. The reviewing attorney is invited to draw whatever conclusions follow from a brokerage rebrand, executed on the calendar between the trial in this case and the present moment. 6. The branch manager, who received the police department text. On July 4, 2024, the day after the unlawful detainer complaint was filed in Orange County Superior Court, the plaintiff sent a text message to Angie Sandoval, branch manager of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services California Properties at the 5848 Edinger Avenue office in Huntington Beach. Ms. Sandoval is a California Department of Real Estate licensee. The text message stated in substance that the plaintiff had just left the Huntington Beach Police Department, where he had reported being the victim of fraud at the property in question. Ms. Sandoval received that text. The text was also documented in a contemporaneous email from a third party that placed the timestamp at 2:18 in the afternoon Pacific Daylight Time on the same day. Ms. Sandoval is the branch manager. She supervises the front desk where the May 30th cashier's check was signed for. She supervises the file cabinet where the executed lease was kept. She reports up to Dennis Allen Rosas, the designated officer of record for the same corporate brokerage that has carried three Department of Real Estate disciplinary proceedings in the affiliated entity record. From the moment Ms. Sandoval received that text, the corporate brokerage was on actual notice that the plaintiff had reported the matter to law enforcement. Any subsequent corporate posture that Berkshire Hathaway or its successor Coldwell Banker did not know that this family had complained to police is in tension with that documented contemporaneous text to a branch manager. The same email chain that captured the Sandoval text was sent to Officer Jay Kuchilla of the Huntington Beach Police Department. The plaintiff was operating contemporaneously to preserve the record while the events were unfolding. The notice to corporate brokerage, the notice to law enforcement, and the notice to opposing counsel were transmitted on the same day, in the same hour, with the same contemporaneous documentation. The lease term, April 26th. 2024. From the day the tenancy began in 2022 through May of 2024, rent went to the landlord personally by wire into his own Wells Fargo account on Beach BLVD in Huntington Beach K. The landlord operated this channel directly by unilaterally changing the payment terms in the first year's contract. There was no broker trust account in use. There was no escrow. In April 2024, the landlord induced the family to sign a new lease renewal. The inducement sequence is preserved in three writings, each dated April 1st, 2024. A text message from the landlord to the husband at 10:04 in the evening, sorry to text you at this time. I just decided to hire a manager to take care of the property. He'll call you and introduce himself. April 2nd, 2024. An email from the landlord the next morning. Lately, I'm too busy with my practice and I'm thinking to hire the company. Help me to manage rental property. Please do not think we're looking new lessee. April 4th, 2024. A second text message, manager is Hanson Lair. This sequence frames what was about to happen as a property management hire. The introduction of a manager into the existing tenancy, not a new lease, not a new lessor of record, not a new payment channel. A management hire. 22 days later, on April 26th, 2024, the family signed what was in fact a brand new 13-month residential lease at $5,350 per month. That lease, with its authentic envelope identifier preserved in the case file, directed rent payments away from the landlord's personal Wells Fargo account, where they had been going for 2 years and 1 month by DocuSign, and now into a new account with Berkshire Hathaway. Section 3, Subdivision D, Paragraph 2 of that lease reads as follows. Bank, Wells Fargo. Name, Hanson Lay. Account number ending in 3297. That account on the face of the lease was a Wells Fargo account in the broker's personal name. Not, on the face of the lease, a designated broker trust account. Before the lease was executed, Mr. Lay sent a text message to the husband from the property manager text line, proposing in substance the redirection of rent payments to himself rather than to the owner. That redirection, on the face of the lease and the contemporaneous text, routed residential rent through a personal deposit account belonging to a California Department of Real Estate licensee. California Business and Professions Code Section 10145 governs how licensed real estate brokers handle trust funds. Section 10145 does not contemplate residential rent flowing into a broker's personal deposit account. Section 10145 contemplates a designated trust account, governed by a written agreement, audited periodically. Now 3 weeks into first month of redirected rent to Hanson Lay's private account after the lease was executed 5 weeks earlier, the landlord himself wrote the following to the husband. In a text message preserved in the case file. Sorry, I didn't know you did pay your rent to the Hanson account. I just texted him to find out. The landlord, only 1 month in with Berkshire Hathaway, did not know where his money was 3 weeks after just the first payment to the company he claimed to hire in his note. Did not know that rent had been received on his behalf on a contract he demanded rent be off contract to Hanson Lay. That writing is in tension with the compliant operation of a Section 10145 trust fund relationship. 8. The notice. The unsigned instrument that opened the case. On June 21, 2024, the landlord served the family with a 3-day notice to pay rent or quit. The notice was prepared by counsel of record, Stephen D. Silverstein, California Bar Number 86466. The notice alleged non-payment of $5,350 in rent for the month of June. That allegation is in tension with the family's documented payment history of 26 consecutive monthly wire transfers across the preceding 2 years, and with the cashier's check the family had already mailed to the corporate broker, dated May 28, 2024, 4 weeks before the notice was served. But that is not the simplest defect on the face of the notice itself. The 3-day notice that opened the unlawful detainer action is unsigned. There is no handwritten signature of the landlord. There is no electronic signature of the landlord. There is no DocuSign envelope identifier evidencing electronic signature. There is no signature block of counsel of record. There is no California State Bar number of counsel of record. The signature line on the notice contains a typed name in plain text and nothing else. California Code of Civil Procedure, Section 1161, governs 3-day notices to pay rent or quit. The signature requirement is not a formality. It is the predicate authentication that establishes who is making the demand and on what authority. Now, the listener is invited to consider the following. The same Council of Record, Stephen D. Silverstein, signed a properly executed 3-day notice to pay rent or quit. On the same statutory form, in the same Orange County courthouse, approximately 3 years earlier, in a different unlawful detainer matter brought by the same landlord. The case is Tran versus Harmon, Orange County Superior Court Case Number 30-2021. Number 3, a court case file in that matter, the rental assistance verification, and the stipulation for entry of judgment was pulled from the Orange County Superior Court e-record system on April 26 by the plaintiff in this case. The notice in that 2021 matter, prepared by the same Council of Record, was signed. The notice in this matter, 3 years later, from the same Council of Record in the same court on the same form, was not. There is no defense of clerical error available to a 47-year specialist who has, in his own published statement, sat as a temporary judge in every Orange County court. There is no defense of unfamiliarity with the statute available to an attorney who has published trade press articles instructing other landlords on how to use the same procedural framework. Counsel's own prior file in the same court, with the same plaintiff, with the same form, properly signed, establishes actual knowledge of the Section 1161 signing requirement. That comparison is the spine of the state bar complaint that has been filed against Mr. Silverstein. The matter is on intake at the State Bar of California Office of Chief Trial Counsel. No finding has been made on the record at this time. The tender. What should have ended the case? On May 28, 2024, 24 days before the 3-day notice was served, the family had already mailed payment for the disputed June rent. The instrument was a Wells Fargo cashier's check in the amount of $4,338.48. The arithmetic on the face of that check is straightforward. $5,350 in rent, less $1,011.52, the documented California Civil Code Section 1942 repair and deduct for a broken kitchen dishwasher the family had paid Home Depot to replace after the landlord refused to repair it. That cashier's check was made payable to Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. It was sent by United States Postal Service certified mail with signature confirmation, tracking number 953491488276414993-5944. It was delivered on May 30th, 3:43 in the afternoon, at 348 Eddington Beach. USPS recorded the delivery as delivered, left with individual, and recorded the signature on the delivery receipt as the letters H, period. H, a signature consistent with the initials of an associate at the office, or of any individual present at the front desk on that date who chose to sign for the registered mail. The cashier's check was tendered. Tender was accepted. Delivery was recorded by a federal agency on a federal server. The funds were never credited to the rent account. The court itself acknowledged this tender. The acknowledgement appears on the face of the court's own minute order, dated March 27, 2025, document identifier 74522578, signed by Commissioner Carmen D. Snuggs Spraggins, Department C-61. The court found that defendant produced a copy of a cashier's check in the amount of $4,338.48 dated May 28, 2024, made payable to Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. The cashier's check itself, the original instrument tendered, has not been produced. It sits sealed in the plaintiff's custody to this day, preserved for latent fingerprint analysis should a criminal case be opened. The funds have never been credited to the rent account. The court's own finding sits on top of a tender that disappeared between the broker's front desk and the rent ledger. 10. The extraction. The off-contract June 28th demand. 7 days after the 3-day notice was served, the landlord placed a phone call to the husband. The substance of that call, as the husband recalls it, "Pay my private account now, today, or I will evict you." The contract, the executed April 26 lease, directed rent to the broker's account, not the landlord's. But the demand was made off contract, by phone. Against the threat of eviction, Wale Hansen Leigh held the funds at the office. The husband paid. Wells Fargo wire confirmation number preserved in the case file. $5,350. Send a memorandum, in the husband's own contemporaneous words, unknown contract for July payment, 27% of 37 on contracts. The landlord accepted the funds. This is the June 28th wire. It went to the landlord's personal account, the same account the prior 26 months of payments had gone to. Off contract. Under threat. After the three-day notice was already served, and the owner Fat Tran in writing had stated Hansen has the check. At trial, counsel of record represented to the court that the landlord had mailed back this electronic wire transfer to his private account off contract June 28th payment as a refund by mail of his paper check. No USPS proof of service was produced. No certified mail tracking was produced. No return receipt was produced. No third-party witness to the alleged mailing was produced. USPS records the alleged refund mailing as lost. The asymmetry on the face of the trial record is documentary. When the family mailed the cashier's check at the May 20 to 8th tender, the family produced USPS-certified mail tracking and a signed delivery receipt. When the landlord's counsel claimed the landlord had mailed the refund, counsel produced nothing. The court was asked to credit the unsupported assertion as a matter of counsel's representation. California Rules of Professional Conduct, Rule 3.3, Subdivision A, Paragraph 1, governs an attorney's duty of candor to the tribunal. California Business and Professions Code, Section 68, Subdivision D, prohibits an attorney from seeking to mislead the judge by an artifice or false statement of fact. The reviewing attorney is invited to read the trial record on the representation made about the alleged refund mailing and to consider those provisions. The closing question of fact. The narrator recalls counsel's final hallway question to him at trial. Substance, did you cash the check? The narrator's answer, no. Because the check did not arrive, according to the United States Mail, there was no signature for the envelope, because USPS recorded the alleged refund mailing as lost. I'm under no obligation to read U.S. mail not signed, for Mr. Gassio stated in court. Because there was no signed envelope check to cash was neither accept or rejected. The exact language of that exchange remains to be conformed to the certified court reporter's transcript from Department C-61, which the plaintiffs will order in due course. But the substance is preserved. The answer was no. And the reason the answer was no is that there was no check to cash if the envelope remained unopened, because the landlord, by his counsel's own representation to the court, had mailed the alleged refund without any of the documentary safeguards the plaintiffs themselves had used 4 weeks earlier when they tendered the cashier's check that the court ultimately acknowledged. 12. The move-out clearance report. The unlawful loan. The family vacated voluntarily on August 1, 2024. Rent current, no sheriff lockout. The keys were returned. A move-out clearance report was executed at a later date. The move-out clearance report was signed in the name of Anna Lai, real estate licensee, formerly the listing agent for the 2022 lease. Anna Lai is the daughter of the property owner. She holds California Department of Real Estate Salesperson License Number 01894348. She operates under the name Sun Realty and Management. 17 months earlier, on March 18, 2023, MS Lai had sent a written email to the wife of the household stating, in substance and in writing, that she no longer worked for Fat Tran and instructing the household to call him directly. That writing terminated her agency relationship with the landlord. 17 months later, after she had ceased acting as the landlord's agent, the move-out clearance report was nonetheless executed in her name. On a DocuSign envelope of F5D247C2, a 1091, 47C2. That report became the basis for security deposit retention claims later submitted to the court. One line item on that report deserves the listener's direct attention. The move-out clearance report contains a pre-printed line for attorney fees. On the report executed by MS Lai on August 5, 2024, that line was filled in with the figure $2,005. That figure was deducted from the Gassio's family's security deposit. No court had authorized that deduction. No judgment had been entered, no fee award had been made, no motion for fees had been filed. The deduction was an extrajudicial self-help retention executed by a Department of Real Estate licensee whose written agency on behalf of the landlord had terminated 17 months earlier. Section 36 of the executed lease, the same lease prepared on the same Berkshire Hathaway corporate platform, caps attorney fees and costs in any dispute arising under the lease at $1,000 combined, exceeds that contractual cap by $1,005 deduction. That figure sat in the landlord's hands for approximately 6 months, interest-free, before the court ever spoke to the question of attorney fees in this case. 6 months later, in early 2025, the court awarded counsel of record $500 in attorney fees as the prevailing party. That $500 award was collected in addition to the $2,005 already retained from the security deposit. It was not credited against, it was not offset, it was not refunded, the two amounts were stacked. Total attorney fee extraction from this family across both events, $2,505, against a $1,000 contractual cap, against a $500 court award, $1,505 over the cap. $2,005 of it retained without any court authorization. That mechanism, on the face of the documentary record, is what California Civil Code Section 1950.5 exists to prevent. Section 1950.5 governs the permitted purposes for retention of a residential security deposit. The permitted purposes are unpaid rent, repair of damage exceeding ordinary wear and tear, cleaning, and where the lease specifically authorizes it, restoration of premises to original condition. Attorney fees are not a Section 1950.5 permitted purpose. The retention of $2,005 in attorney fees from a residential security deposit, without court authorization, with no statutory permission, with no contractual authority beyond a $1,000 cap that the deduction itself exceeded, is a Section 1950.5 subdivision L bad faith retention on its face. Statutory damages under that subdivision are up to twice the amount of the deposit, plus actual damages. Mr. Silverstein, who in his own published copy has practiced California eviction law for 47 years, who in his own published copy has sat as judge pro tem in every Orange County court, who in his own published article in the trade press has instructed landlord clients on the precise procedural mechanics of California unlawful detainer and security deposit accounting, would recognize a $2,005 attorney fee deduction on a residential move-out clearance report as exceeding both California statute and the lease's own $1,000 cap on first reading. That recognition is what 47 years of specialty practice produces. This narration does not assert that Mr. Silverstein personally executed the move-out clearance report. The signature on that report was Anna Lees. What this narration does state, on the face of the documentary record, is that the proceeds of that retention flowed to a fee category in which Mr. Silverstein was the exclusive beneficiary, that the retention exceeded the lease's contractual cap, that the retention occurred without court authorization, and that the retention occurred under the supervision of a corporate brokerage whose designated officer of record had personally signed a Department of Real Estate negligence stipulation 3 years earlier. The pattern questions the record raises. The documentary record this narration has summarized raises three questions that go beyond the four corners of the Gassio file. This narration cannot answer them. The agencies, prosecutors, and civil counsel to whom this case file has been submitted are positioned to do so. Question one. Did the same move-out clearance report mechanism with a pre-printed attorney fees line filled in extrajudicially get used against the prior tenant who fought the same Tran property eviction at the same address and was removed the day after Christmas? The prior tenant's deposit accounting, if preserved, sits in the same file system as this family's. Question 2. Did the same family use the same move-out clearance report mechanism in the documented prior unlawful detainer matter brought by Anna Lai against her own sister, Tao Tran? The intra-family eviction is a matter of public record in the Orange County Superior Court e-record system. The deposit accounting from that matter is reachable. Question 3. Across Mr. Silverstein's 47-year eviction practice spanning Los Angeles, Orange, Riverside, and San Bernardino counties. How many tenants have been processed through move-out clearance reports executed by adverse party real estate licensees that included attorney fees deductions exceeding the underlying lease's contractual fee cap, without court authorization, and without subsequent refund or offset against later court-awarded fees? The records that would answer that question are reachable by California State Bar Audit, by California Department of Real Estate Audit, and by civil discovery in any class action that may follow. This narration does not answer those three questions. It simply identifies them as questions the documentary record raises. 14 after the eviction, Airbnb, the post-dated invoice, and the bunk bed. The move-out clearance report's second substantial deduction was $7,835 for carpet replacement. The invoice supporting that deduction was issued by Lye Construction, license number 1068334. The proprietor, Dave Lye, shares a surname with Anna Lye, the executor of the move-out clearance report, and is identified in the case file as a relative. The Lye Construction invoice is dated August 14, 2024. That invoice postdates the move-out clearance report deduction by 9 days. The move-out clearance report deducted $7,835 on August 5th, 2024, against an invoice that did not yet exist. The carpet replacement itself postdates the City of Huntington Beach inspector's clearance of the property by 18 days. The city inspector confirmed that there was no pet damage and that the carpets were clean on her inspection of 19,235 Bryn Court less than a week before the family moved. 18 days later, the carpet was billed as needing full replacement due to dog pee bad smell. The animals on the premises had been permitted in writing by two successive signed pet addenda on two successive leases, including one signed by the owner himself. The pet deposit had been collected. Section 1950.5 permits retention for damage caused by permitted animals only to the extent that the damage exceeds the pet deposit, which it does not. Within weeks of the family's departure, the property reappeared on Airbnb under the host name Vu Wee, a 7-year host managing multiple Huntington Beach short-term rentals, at a monthly rate that has been documented as approximately $7,995. That figure is 122% above what the prior tenant had paid. The interior photographs on the Airbnb listing show vinyl plank flooring throughout, new baseboards, and a renovated kitchen aesthetic. The property had been converted for short-term rental use. There is no carpet in the photographs. The $7,800 carpet replacement deduction was charged against a property that the new short-term rental listing photographed as having no carpet. Finally, during the active tenancy in the summer of 2024, a person associated with the owner removed the plaintiff's child's bunk bed frame from the property. The frame was never placed in storage. The frame was never returned. California Penal Code Section 487 defines grand theft at a property value threshold that the bunk bed exceeded. The statutory framework where the recoveries sit. This narration does not assert legal conclusions. The narrator is not an attorney. The reviewing attorney will form independent judgment. What follows is the statutory framework the documentary record raises, identified for orientation only. Federal Mail Fraud, Title 18, United States Code, Section 1341. The use of the United States mails in furtherance of a scheme to defraud. The documentary asymmetry between the plaintiff's tendered cashier's check, sent by certified mail with tracking and signature, and the landlord's alleged refund mailing, sent without any documentary safeguard and recorded by USPS as lost, is the predicate. Federal Wire Fraud, Title 18, United States Code, Section 1343. Each interstate electronic transmission in furtherance of the scheme is a separate count. The DocuSign routing of the April 26th lease alone, with each leg of the routing constituting a separate interstate wire transmission, supports a count theory in the range of 10 to 12 counts on that single envelope. Each Wells Fargo wire in the 18-wire pattern is a separate transmission. The trial record exhibits routed by interstate e-filing are separate transmissions. A conservative count theory across the entire scheme sits in the range of 50 to 80 counts under Section 1343 alone. Statutory maximum on each count, 20 years imprisonment. Where the scheme affects a financial institution, and Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. is the depository institution on both the broker personal account at issue and the landlord personal account at issue, the enhancement raises the per count maximum to 30 years. Federal Fair Housing Act, Title 42, United States Code, Sections 3604 and 3617. The non-English-speaking, named resident, senior occupant of the household, whose status was held in writing by the listing brokerage prior to lease execution, was not addressed by name on the three-day notice. The notice was served in English only, with no translation, no statement of senior status, no accommodation. Section 3604 governs discrimination in housing on the basis of national origin and familial status. Section 3617 governs interference, coercion, or intimidation in the exercise of fair housing rights. Both have been submitted to the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, Housing and Civil Enforcement Section, in the 11-letter agency packet transmitted on April 25, 2026. California Welfare and Institutions Code Sections 1561027 and 1561030, Financial Elder Abuse. California Civil Code Section 3345, Treble Damages in Actions by Senior Plaintiffs. California Civil Code Section 1950.5, Security Deposit Retention Rules. The $2,005 attorney fees deduction on the move-out clearance report is a Section 1950.5 Subdivision L bad faith retention on its face. Statutory damages of up to twice the deposit amount, plus actual damages. California Business and Professions Code, Section 17200, Unfair Business Practices. Restitution and disgorgement of profits, including Airbnb conversion revenue. California Business and Professions Code, Section 6128, Attorney Deceit Toward the Tribunal. Treble damages in a civil action, independent of the misdemeanor exposure. California Business and Professions Code, Section 10145. Broker handling of trust funds against the executing licensee, against the corporate broker, with the corporate broker's affiliated entity holding three documented Department of Real Estate disciplinary proceedings, and with the designated officer of record having personally signed the most recent of those stipulations. California Penal Code Sections 518 and 519, Extortion. The off-contract phone demand for the June 28th payment against the threat of eviction is the predicate. California Civil Code, Section 1942.5, Retaliation. Statutory damages of $100 to $2,000 per violation, plus attorney fees. California Code of Civil Procedure, Section 170.3, and Canon 6, Subdivision D, of the California Code of Judicial Ethics, Disclosure and Disqualification Rules Applicable to a Private Attorney Appointed as Judge Pro Tem. An attorney who sits on the bench in the same chamber where his own client's deposit accounting paperwork is processed by court staff acquired institutional familiarity with those staff. Whether the appearance of impropriety rules in the canons of judicial ethics required disclosure of that institutional familiarity, in the present matter or in others, is a question for the California Commission on Judicial Performance and the California State Bar to evaluate on the records to which they have access. California State Bar Rules of Professional Conduct, Rule 3.3, Candor Toward the Tribunal. Rule 3.4, Fairness to Opposing Party and Counsel. Rule 3.1, Meritorious Claims and Contentions. Each rule applies on the face of the conduct described in this brief. The pitch. Speaking directly to qualified counsel. If you are still listening at this minute, the narrator owes you a direct conversation. This narration has been written for and is being directed to qualified civil counsel who bills at $800 an hour and has been asked to consider this matter for representation. You are not reading this for charity. The narrator does not insult your time by pretending otherwise. What follows is the case on its merits, framed for fee analysis. The damages are real, documented, and recoverable. Direct economic damages. Excess rent paid through the manipulated 2024 lease. $12,000 in moving and relocation costs. The unlawful $2,005 attorney fee deduction from the security deposit. The $7,835 carpet invoice retention against an invoice post-dating the city inspector's clearance. The duplicate $10,700 payment under written protest. Personal property removed by the Airbnb operator while the lease was still in force, including a child's bunk bed frame and other items. Estimated economic damages range, before treble enhancements, in the range of $75,000 to $120,000. Statutory treble damages under California Civil Code Section 3345, where the plaintiff includes a senior. The mother is named as a resident on every executed lease. The economic damages base is multiplied by 3. Statutory damages under California Civil Code Section 1950.5, Subdivision L, for bad faith security deposit retention. Up to twice the amount of the deposit, plus actual damages. Statutory treble damages under California Business and Professions Code Section 6128. Against opposing counsel personally for deceit toward the tribunal independent of the misdemeanor exposure. Statutory damages under Civil Code Section 1942.5, retaliation, plus attorney fees as the prevailing party. Restitution and disgorgement of profits under Business and Professions Code Section 17200, including Airbnb conversion revenue at 122% above the prior tenant rate. Punitive damages evaluated against the documented conduct of a 47-year veteran of California eviction practice who has, in his own published marketing copy, pleaded guilty to being overly aggressive in the prosecution of evictions, and who has been a federal defendant in a prior matter in which a federal jury entered judgment against him personally. Attorney fees, as the prevailing party under multiple statutory bases. The total recoverable, with reasonable application of the available statutory enhancements, sits in the range of $350,000 to $750,000 in civil recovery, before consideration of any criminal restitution that may follow from the federal wire fraud and mail fraud, predicates submitted to the United States Postal Inspection Service, the FBI Los Angeles Field Office, and the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division on April 25, 2026. That is a case worth $800 an hour. The defendants are not judgment-proof. Fat Tran is a practicing California dentist with documented ownership of an $11,300,000 Orange County property network, 2 dental practices, and $1.27 million in commercial real estate. There is money to recover. Berkshire Hathaway Home Services California Properties, now operating as Coldwell Banker Envision, is a national franchise brokerage with primary professional liability insurance. Mr. Silverstein, as a 47-year California licensee, carries primary attorney professional liability insurance. There are deep pockets, there are insurance policies, there is recovery available across multiple defendants and multiple coverage layers. The case has been pre-organized for you. 12 sections at GacyOmira.com, every primary document indexed, every statute identified, every count framed, every transmission counted, every party identified, biographized, and license traced. An 11-letter agency packet sent by certified mail to Orange County DA, the California State Bar, the FBI Los Angeles, the U.S. Postal Inspection Service, the DOJ Civil Rights Division, the CFPB, and 7 other agencies. An 8-block evidence chain identical across all 11 envelopes. You will not need to assemble the case. The case has been assembled. You will need only to read it, evaluate it on its merits, and decide whether you want to represent the family that paid $105,000 in rent across 26 months, was evicted on an unsigned notice by a 47-year veteran of California eviction practice, who sits as judge pro tem in every Orange County court, and whose elderly mother slept on the floor the first night of the tenancy because there was no second bed. The narrator's own posture. The narrator is 72 years old. The narrator does not want money from the defendants for himself. The narrator wants the law applied. The narrator wants the public record served. The narrator wants the documented record reviewed by the authorities to whom it has been submitted. If qualified counsel chooses to represent this family in pursuit of the available civil recoveries, the narrator will support that representation in every reasonable way, including by making available the entire indexed case file, by providing testimony at the appropriate stages, and by yielding the litigation strategy to counsel of record. The narrator has done his part. The narrator has spent 15 months organizing the record into a form that qualified professionals can work with. The narrator has spent $30.14 on April 26 to retrieve the comparator file from the Orange County Superior Court that establishes that the same counsel of record signed a properly executed notice 3 years earlier in another matter. The work has been done. The record is on the table. The eight-block evidence chain is in the hands of 11 agencies. The portal is public. The cashier's check sits sealed, preserved for latent fingerprint analysis should a criminal case be opened. The USPS tracking record sits on federal servers. The Wells Fargo wire ledger sits on Wells Fargo's servers. The DocuSign envelope audit trail sits on the Berkshire Hathaway platform, now Coldwell Banker Envision. The Yahoo Mail transmission headers for every dated communication sit on Yahoo's servers. The BMUN federal judgment against Mr. Silverstein sits on the PACER docket. Each of those record systems is reachable by subpoena. Close what the record asks. This is not a civil complaint. This is a preserved documentary record prepared for review by qualified counsel and by appropriate regulatory and prosecutorial authorities. The plaintiffs are not seeking reimbursement. The plaintiffs are not asking the defendants for money. The plaintiffs have spent 15 months organizing, submitting, and preserving evidence, and have made that evidence available to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Los Angeles Field Office, the United States Postal Inspection Service, the California Department of Real Estate, the California State Bar Enforcement Division, the Orange County District Attorney's Real Estate Fraud Unit, the Federal Trade Commission, the Huntington Beach Police Department, the California Department of Insurance, the United States Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, and the Department of Housing and Urban Development Office of Inspector General. The record did not weaken over those 15 months, it compounded. The cashier's check sits sealed, preserved for latent fingerprint analysis should a criminal case be opened. The USPS tracking record sits on federal servers. The Wells Fargo wire ledger sits on the bank's servers. The AuthenTdesign audit trail sits on the Berkshire Hathaway platform. The Yahoo Mail transmission headers for the contemporaneous correspondence sit on Yahoo's servers. Each of those record systems is reachable by subpoena. What this record asks of the listener is a decision, not a conclusion. The narrator does not ask the listener to agree with any characterization. The narrator asks only that the listener read the primary documents in the order they occurred and decide whether the conduct described warrants the attention of the authorities to whom the plaintiffs have submitted the materials. The narrator is a retired California public school administrator. The narrator is 72 years old. The narrator spent his career protecting other people's children inside the California public school system. And before that, protecting the finances of other people's families inside the California automotive industry. And before that, working with young people caught in the California justice system. The narrator has in this matter applied those same disciplines to a documentary record for the benefit of the state of California and its people. The record is complete. The record is permanent. The record is on the table. If you are the attorney this brief was written for, the narrator invites you to one of two paths. Either contact Gassio77 at yahoo.com to request the full case file, the agency packet, and the evidentiary index with a view to representation on contingency, on hourly hybrid, or on whatever fee arrangement reflects the scale of the recovery and the volume of work required. Or close the file, and let the next attorney who hears this narration be the one who represents this family. Scope and methodology. This narration summarizes only what appears in primary documents preserved in the case file and indexed at gassiomira.com, Section 10. No statement in this narration characterizes any individual as having committed a crime. Criminal liability is determined by qualified prosecutors and courts, not by the plaintiffs, by this site, or by this narration. Statutory citations identify legal frameworks within which the documented facts may be analyzed by qualified investigators. counts where named, are framed as discrete units for prosecutorial and disciplinary review, and are subject to amendment upon receipt of additional information. The plaintiffs make no assertion of legal conclusion. The California State Bar proceeding concerning former defense counsel Richard Joseph Rosiak is under formal review by examiner Devin Urbany of the Enforcement Division. No finding of attorney misconduct has been made on that record at this time. The California State Bar matter concerning counsel of record Stephen D. Silverstein, bar number 86466, is on intake at the Office of Chief Trial Counsel. No finding of attorney misconduct has been made on that record at this time. The Beeman v. Silverstein federal judgment cited in this narration is a matter of public record on the federal PACER docket, case number 8-17-0550, Central District of California, and is referenced for its docket existence and outcome only. References to Stephen D. Silverstein in this narration refer exclusively to the holder of California State Bar, number 86466. They do not refer to any other attorney sharing a similar name. The reviewing attorney is asked to verify that distinction at apps.calbar.ca.gov before independently using this material. This site is a public interest case file assembled and published by Michael Agassio, plaintiff pro se in Gassio v. Tran et al., Orange County Superior Court case number 32024141991. The plaintiff is not on this site constitutes legal advice. Every factual assertion is drawn from primary documents, executed contracts, bank records, emails, text messages, court filings, public licensing records, and public records directory entries preserved in the case file and referenced by source and date. No statement should be read as a determination that any named person has committed a crime, violated a statute, or breached a professional duty. Those determinations are reserved to qualified counsel, regulatory agencies, and the courts. References to Stephen D. Silverstein refer exclusively to the holder of California State Bar, number 86466. No reference is made to any other attorney sharing a similar name. The Beeman v. Silverstein federal judgment is a matter of public record and is cited for docket existence only. This publication is made in the exercise of rights protected by the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. Article Y, Section 2 of the California Constitution, California Civil Code Section 47D, and the Noah Pennington Doctrine.